So thinking about how trauma impacts on our brains and therefore on our kind of day-to-day functioning and what that might look like in different settings for children. So if you imagine that your brain is the most incredible smartphone, like it's all singing, all dancing, it can do all manner of amazing, wonderful things. But there is a part of your brain which is really, really basic. So it's like the most basic Android phone or Nokia 3210, but when I say that, I show my age. But unfortunately, when you experience something that makes you fearful, so that triggers those fear responses, the amazing all-singing part of your phone just loses connection. You can't access anything. You can't access your emails. You can't access the internet. It's all gone. And all you're left with is your basic things of the Nokia 3210. You can send a text. You can make a phone call. You can play Snake. That's all you can do. That is essentially what happens to our brains when we are really intensely afraid of something. And that fear doesn't necessarily have to be rational. It could be that those fear responses are triggered by something as simple as hearing rustling leaves behind you. You will find that your body responds first, and then maybe something connects and you the risk suddenly in your brain reduces because you realize it's just rustling leaves. But you'll notice the first thing that happens is your body might tense up and you might become super alert. So the body has learned to take offline the really smart part of your brain, the executive functioning part of your brain, the bit where you kind of do all of your rational thinking and weighing up of pros and cons. That it's an incredible part of your brain, but it's too slow. It does everything really slowly. So it goes, right, if there's a fear response, if there's something that's going to pose a risk to us, we don't have time for that. We don't have to have time to weigh up pros and cons and things like that. Take that offline, and we're just going to focus on our basic things that we can do to keep us alive. And those responses are your fight, flight, freeze, friend, flop responses. So your five Fs. So flight could look like trying to run away from something, trying to get away from something. Your fight response, trying to push someone away, trying to get away from a situation. Your freeze response is not being able to move, not being able to talk. And your flop response is where the body literally does become floppy, which means that like if there was going to be any kind of significant impact, you're much less likely to be really seriously physically injured if your body has already gone floppy. And there's the friend response, which is an unusual one because you don't necessarily see it in animals in quite the same way as you do in humans. It's the one where you try and bring that person or the thing that's posing a risk to you on side, and generally you see it if you've ever told a child off and then you find them smiling and laughing at you. It's really infuriating because you're trying to be really serious and an adult about things, and they're smiling and laughing, and actually it's their brain's response going, oh, this is scary, this doesn't feel very nice, I'm going to smile at this person, I'm going to engage this person, I'm going to bring them back on side because that might reduce the scary, that might reduce the risk to me. And these responses are not a choice. They're not something that we're kind of going through and going, oh, this is what's going to work now. Your brain is just going through them really quickly in order to keep you safe. And your brain doesn't care about the long-term psychological impacts of this. It cares about whether you are physically intact and whether you have maintained attachments. So unfortunately for those children who are being sexually abused, particularly by family members, it's doubly confusing because their brain is attempting to maintain attachments with the person who is potentially harming them. So it's much more likely to lead to things like complex PTSD because the brain kind of confuses itself by trying to do two things simultaneously, keeping them physically safe but also maintaining attachments, but the person they're trying to maintain attachments to is hurting them. And so I think in the long term, children who've experienced trauma over a long period of time, these responses can become overreactive. So there's a part of your brain, which is an alarm system, which is called the amygdala, and it fires when it detects fear or risk, and then it instigates these 5F responses. But over a long period of time, if you experience kind of repetitive trauma, it becomes overactive. So it might start to read normal everyday experiences as being threatening and risky. And this could be something as simple as the teacher asking you a question in a lesson could trigger a fight, flight, freeze response. And you might end up with either a student who is no longer able to answer, or a student who suddenly starts kicking off and becomes really aggressive. It could be that actually their brain has been triggered with these responses and they're just acting. And I think that's why it's always really important to just to notice those things and to wonder like, oh, hang on, that's really interesting as to I asked this sort of question and then it led to this behaviour. I wonder if there's something else going on for that child or young person. But as far as trauma is concerned, it can also impact on kind of recollection of memory. So when the executive functioning part of your brain, the lovely smartphone part of your brain, is offline, it also takes off your filing system. So usually our brain is filing our memories all day long, and it puts like a full stop at the end of everything. When your brain goes into fear mode, it takes that bit offline. You're no longer filing. That part of your brain is pumping cortisol through your body, making sure that you're ready for any risks, primed and ready to run or fight, etc. So when everything comes back online, things are kind of a bit chaotic in terms of your memory. If you imagine like a filing system where somebody's just left the paperwork on top of the filing cabinet and they've not bothered to file it properly, that's kind of how your traumatized fear memories are stored. And sometimes through talking and working through things, they can be filed properly and appropriately. But sometimes they don't get that. They get stored in the wrong part of your brain. And those fear responses can also trigger you into having what we know is flashbacks and re-experiencing of trauma, which can happen through really innocuous things as well.